Welcome to the JP Shattered Podcast. Today is Tuesday, August 15th, and here's a weekly look around the Jags organization. We'll recap the past week for the Jaguars, including the aftermath of the win over the New England Patriots last week, the first practice inside the Daly's Place Flex Field, and the joint practices with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And a lot going on around the team this week, too. The backup quarterback got some reps with the ones. A couple of running backs are nicked up. There's an injury to a frontline receiver and a switch back at the linebacker spot in the middle. We'll catch up with 1010XL's Hayes Carline for a little perspective and what to expect the rest of the week in preseason week two. And as always, when the Bucs come calling, we take the opportunity to visit with the great voice of the Bucs and voice of the Florida State Seminoles, Gene Deckerhoff. But let's start off with the week in review, and it started last Thursday night with a 34-21 win over the Patriots at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. All offseason, the Jags brass had said that they want to set the tone with a physical run game. Well, if you're into preseason stats, then you'll know they set that tone. They ran 37 times compared to 18 passes in the game. It's a ratio that will be nearly impossible to keep up with in the regular season. Rookie Leonard Fournette converted a 4th-and-1 play early and then scored on a 1-yard run in the second quarter. He finished with 9 carries for 31 yards, and the first-round pick's confidence continues to soar.
Man, it's our first game, you know, wasn't really nervous. You know, I mean, I've been playing football. I'm 22, so 22 years, and it's great. I think we got better playing as the Super Bowl champions. You know, hopefully we made them better, you know, and I know for sure they made us better.
There was another quote out there saying that he thought it was easy and that the speed wasn't that big of a factor. Well, remember, the Patriots did not play any starters in the game and likely did not game plan at all. The game speed will change week one when J.J. Watt, Whitney Merciless, Jadeveon Clowney, and all the rest are lined up for the Texans. But so far, Fournette has been up to every challenge, and there's no reason to think he won't be up for that one, too. The story of the game, of course, was big plays. A 97-yard touchdown pass from Chad Henne to undrafted rookie Keelan Cole in the second quarter, a 79-yard run by Corey Grant for a score in the third quarter, and a 42-yard touchdown pass from Brandon Allen to rookie fourth-round pick Dede Westbrook. Blake Bortles played two series to start the game, but there wasn't much of a sample size to take much away from his night. He finished 3 of 5 passing for 16 yards. The Jags had Friday off, but returned to the practice field Saturday for what seemed to be the hottest practice of camp so far. Temperatures were in the low 90s, and the humidity was absolutely stifling. But for a first day back from an off day, head coach Doug Marrone had to challenge the team. After the practice, Marrone was asked about the play of undrafted rookie Keelan Cole, who was flashed in camp and, of course, in the game against the Patriots. And it reminded Marrone of a New Orleans Saints standout.
Marcus Colston was a 7th-round pick who really came in and did a lot of the things, you know, that Cole did from an offensive standpoint. Different types of players, though. You know, what I was happy to see was, you know, the special teams play that we were able to get out of him. I mean, we saw him run down there, you know, make the tackle. We saw him even on, and the things that you won't see is like kickoff return and getting a good block. So really, from a standpoint of doing everything that he has to do to make this team, you know, that's what he's doing. And he's doing it right now well.
It was also the return to the practice field for cornerback Jalen Ramsey, who spent the early part of the camp on the physically unable to perform list, recovering from core muscle surgery in the offseason. He only did positional drills and did not participate in one-on-one or teamwork. You better not question the second-year cornerback's ability to get back on the field.
No, it's not frustrating. Of course, I'd rather be playing. It's all a process. It's a part of my growth as a football player. I got to get my body right. So I don't look at it as a setback at all. I look at it kind of, you know, it's just me revamping my body, just getting my body better to be back out there and be better 20 this year. Oh, we're going to be ready for opening day. I can't talk about, you know, day to day, but I'll let you know we're going to be ready for that. Perfect. Promise you that.
There's no need to press the issue with him getting ready for the Texans week one. That's the main priority for the Jaguars' top cornerback. And when Sunday came around, the Heat finally won. And with the Buccaneers coming into town Monday and Tuesday, Marrone decided to move the Sunday workout into the new Daly's Place Flex Field, the first time the Jags held a full practice indoors. And a lot happened that day. Chad Henne took some reps with the ones. Paul Posluszny moved back to Mike linebacker. Marquise Lee went down late with an ankle injury that apparently looked worse than it is, though he will miss a little bit of time. Hayes Carline of 1010XL.
It was quite a day on Sunday. And let's start with the Bortles thing. I mean, that was really interesting to see him, you know, basically be pulled halfway through the workout for Chad Henne. It looked like he'd been benched because he'd thrown a couple of picks. Doug Marrone came out after that and said, no, it was more of a pitch count. Then he came out yesterday on Monday and said, well, I misspoke. It wasn't really a pitch count, but his arm looks tired. That's concerning to me. I mean, if that's legitimately it, I mean, they've only played one preseason game. So to have your starting quarterback, you know, have the head coach notice that he thinks his arm looks tired, a little bit of a concern. And I also wonder, too, if there was a message being sent to Blake and also Marrone sending a message to his veterans that, look, it's not going to be like last year. If Blake's having an off day, we're going to go ahead and put Chad in and see if he can salvage the game for us. So, but yeah, really interesting day with the quarterbacks on Sunday.
The other part of that was that when Chad Henne got out there, played pretty well in practice too, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the fifth year that I've been out here. Chad's been here the whole time, and I thought the last 10 days, I wasn't up in New England, but I thought the few days before the team left for Foxborough, how he played Thursday night in Foxborough, and then the couple of days back, really, it's been the sharpest I've ever seen Chad Henne. So it does seem like he's, you know, elevated his game. And you know, Tom Coughlin comes from that Bill Parcells school of thought, which is, you know, when it comes to the quarterback position, you know, I don't want green bananas. And what he means by that is I want, you know, I like seasoned veterans. Parcells, you know, obviously had Pennington, Testaverde. And I think if he feels like, and Coughlin, I think, goes by this as well, if everything else on the team is good, then you just need that quarterback that can be steady and consistent, not necessarily an electric playmaker. I still think this is Bortles' team, but I think it was important for Marrone to show to the rest of the locker room that, look, you know, there's a reason Chad Henne's here, and if our starter's not having the greatest day, then we've got a guy that we can go to. But Chad, give Chad credit. He's had a really good camp, I think.
There are consequences if you don't play well now, it seems like. Now to the quarterback of the defense. The middle linebacker changed on Sunday as well. Paul Posluszny moved back to that spot. Miles Jack back to the strong side. And this is that time of year, I guess, when you're going to see different things and see how they go. It's not really a testament to how Jack played, because he played okay in the game against the Patriots. I think they are just trying some things out. What did you make of Puz going back to middle?
Yeah, I think this is really the last week where the team can experiment with some things, because next week Carolina is going to feel like a regular season week of preparation. And so I think this is a good opportunity for them to take one last look at things. But I'll say this, I mean, sometimes the simplest solution is just the easiest solution. And it would seem like, you know, if you've made Miles Jack a three-down linebacker, which is what everybody would like to see, then why not put Paz in the middle and base, because it's what he's comfortable with. And he's talked about his eyes have to be trained totally different now playing on the strong side. So why make it difficult maybe for two guys? Why not just have Posluszny stay in the middle where he's comfortable, where he's a very good base middle linebacker, have Miles work at the Sam on those downs, which is really only going to be about 35% of the snaps probably anyway, and then have Miles go back to the middle once you're in nickel. So I think it makes a lot of sense, and it'll be interesting to see. I think the benefit of having Paz fill those run gaps correctly, as opposed to, you know, the mistakes Miles could make, I think that outweighs the possibility of Paz giving up a play in pass coverage on first, second down.
This time of camp, injuries start to creep up, and no different for the Jags. Fournette's out right now. Marquise Lee is out with an ankle injury. All three of the corners are out for this team on defense. It is normal in camp, but it is not ideal for this football team.
Yeah, and it is. It's disappointing to see, you know, but hopefully Fournette is a precautionary and that won't, you know, take up any time in Houston. I think when you start to get looking at Marquise Lee, that one I think is a concern. Now, it's great that, you know, he might be able to even give them any sort of contribution this year, because when we saw him go down on Sunday, it really looked ugly and everybody immediately feared that it could be an IR situation with Marquise. Even if it is a high ankle sprain, which has been reported nationally, but the Jaguars don't want to, you know, specifically say that, you'd probably be looking at a player with Marquise's ability 6 to 8 weeks before he's really back to being Marquise Lee. So I wouldn't expect to see Marquise much through the first four games of the season, just guessing if it is a high ankle sprain. But look, even if you can just get 12 games out of Marquise, I think anybody would have taken that when they were watching him, you know, seeing Telvin wave over the medical team and seeing Allen Hurns going off with Marquise on the cart. It looked really serious. So obviously it's great news if it's something that Marquise can get back on the field this season.
The Bucs came into town Sunday night and the teams hit the field for the first of two joint practices Monday morning. A few notes from that first first practice. Dante Fowler had a pretty good day, a year after getting shut down by DeMar Dotson in the same practice. Blake Bortles took all the reps with the ones, and Doug Marrone afterwards adjusted his widely heard pitch count comment regarding taking Bortles out on Sunday.
And, you know, I probably might have misspoke when I said pitch count. Like, we do monitor it, you know what I'm saying? So I just went back, you know, and looked at it. Really, the other day I just saw his, you know, his arm look tired. Rather than push him, knowing that he was going to get, you know, all the reps that we needed for these next couple of days, you know, I just said, hey, it was my decision. He's like, well, hey, I'm good. I can go. And I said, look, let's just be smart. And that's, you know, no different than you know, Chris Ivory yesterday. You know, when I was asked afterwards, you know, hey, he had an injury. He was going to go yesterday. But I walked to Chris and I pulled Chris because I thought it was more important for us to be able to practice today and get all the reps than it was to try to push them, or maybe not to put them in jeopardy, but obviously one more day's rest can't hurt when it comes down to those type of situations.
Also on Monday, we caught up with Jaguars wide receivers coach Keenan McCardell, and Allen Robinson is having a strong camp thus far. But for Keenan, there's a next step for the fourth-year receiver.
I'm trying to get him to lead more by vocally, not because he's a leader by example. I want him to step up and take charge. I always tell him people respect you with the way you play. So you got a chance to say something. You got the right to say something. So, I mean, I just keep stressing it. Just keep playing, keep showing up every day to come out to work. And then when you say something, people, they'll follow what you say.
Very interesting. Hear the entire interview from Keenan McCardell coming up Thursday night on the Public's Tailgate Show. That airs at 5 o'clock on 1010XL Radio, Jaguars.com, and the Jaguars app. Anytime the Buccaneers come to town, it's always good to catch up with the great voice of the Bucs and the Florida State Seminoles, Gene Deckerhoff. Yeah. Happy New Year, man.
Well, happy New Year in August, and good to be back home. You know, I was raised in Jacksonville, so Everbank Stadium is just 10 times better than the old Gator Bowl used to be, I'll promise you that.
They've upgraded.
Yeah, that's been an upgrade.
Over the years. I feel like this is becoming an annual tradition, the Bucks and the Jags in the preseason. The proximity helps, but it's familiarity with the franchises.
Well, and then look at this. You got Mike Smith and Dirk Cutter. Both have spent time in Jacksonville with the Jaguars, obviously, defensive side, offensive side of the football. So it's sort of like old home week. I asked Coach Smith, I said, Mike, I said, you still got a house in Jacksonville? No, he says, I was lucky I sold it. I sold it. So he said, I got enough houses. So I don't know how many he has, but he does not have one still in Jacksonville.
It's a lot of houses for a former head coach. You never know.
Coaches move.
That's right.
And, you know, as you can do worse things with your investment dollar than buying real estate in Jacksonville, Florida.
I'd like to call a truce with you right now. There were a lot of camp fights today on the field, so that's not going to be one in the booth here. Okay,
no.
Let's just get that out there right
now. No, I don't think I've been in a fight since my brother and I got tangled up back in the 1950s.
It's been a little bit. But this is the type of camp where you have joint practices. The Jags were in New England last week, and that's not quite a fighting organization. They kind of walk away. They're the Super Bowl champs. That's what they do. It's the second week of that for the Jaguars, and it's hot, and it's another team pushing on you. And these kind of things happen in a camp like this.
Well, the first one happened about halfway through. I think I wrote in my little notepad about period number 7. And what did they do? About 12 periods, 13 periods a day. So it was about the halfway mark, and it was offensive lineman versus defensive lineman, a little pass rush thing. Center snaps the ball, then the double team. And Ngakoue got around Donovan Smith, and Donovan Smith sort of shoved him. And the next thing you know, there was it wasn't bench clearing because there were no benches, but that was the one that I saw. And then there were a couple as the heat wears you down. And about period number 11, maybe about 10 minutes left to go, there were two on fields other than where I was.
Well, but I was on that field. It was Jags receivers and Bucks DBs. Yeah. A couple of guys went to the ground, and then it was game on.
Yeah, but it like you say, it's hot, it's brutal. Hydrate. Don't know how they do it. I go to football practice in Tallahassee. I go to football practice in Tampa. I go to football practice, obviously, the joint practice here in Jacksonville, and I don't know how guys do it. I just don't know.
And it's only one a day. It used to be 2 days.
Well, yeah. Figure that one out. Well, back in the day when Ray Perkins was the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I was there the last year and a half he coached. But I understand he had 3-a-days in August heat. By October, our players had no legs. No wonder the Bucs could not win football games.
that's a problem come later in the year. Gene Deckerhoff is with us. Jameis Winston spoke yesterday with the media on the field. That's the first time I'd really had a chance to watch him interact with the local Tampa media here in Jacksonville.
he's got a presence about him. He's got a. It seems like he's locked in and has a love for the game. Is that accurate?
You know, for a 23-year-old young man, he has it. Charlie Ward, somebody asked Charlie, who won the school's first Heisman Trophy of Florida, say, what is it about James? He says he's got that it factor. And let me tell you a story. You may have heard this story before. Remember, James played baseball and football at Florida State University. And Mike Barton Jr., associate head coach, his dad, the longtime legendary Hall of Fame head baseball coach at Florida State, Mike said he says, James Winston, as a freshman, walked into that clubhouse and immediately took command of the clubhouse. He says, that doesn't happen. You know, you got juniors, you got seniors in baseball, and they've been around, you know, and they just all of a sudden, this was the man. And that's the way he's been since I've known him. He is the man, and I think the number one pick in the draft 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, was the right choice. It was Jameis Winston. He has taken this Tampa Bay Buccaneer team to great things, at least in the locker room. He's a leader inside. He's a leader outside. Tremendous individual when it comes to whatever it does to help his franchise, whether it's making an appearance. I asked Jason Light, who is the general manager. He wanted Jameis and Lovie Smith, remember, but Brian Ford is the chief operating officer. He does everything except coach football. Ticket sales, stadium development, advertising, marketing, personnel, PR, that's all. And I said, I know how Jameis is with football, but how is he with what you do? He said he's never been around a professional athlete as accommodating as Jameis. You don't have to remind him he's supposed to be at a certain place at a certain time. You don't have to go drag him out of the dormitory to get into this appearance. He came to a Florida State, South Florida baseball game down in Tampa his rookie year after sat in the dugout with two young fellows that he brought as guests that he had invited from a school that he had made an appearance at. And they were the honorary bat boys. And at the end of the game, he stayed for the whole game. And when the game was over, you know, in the college game, the players line up and they give, you know, high five, shake hands and all that. And Chip Baker said, he said, it was amazing. You should have seen the eyes on those South Florida players, because some of those were used to seeing Jameis. But this is the face of the NFL franchise where they play college baseball. And here he was giving them high fives, you know. But that's Jameis Winston. I've known him since he was a freshman, and he's one of a kind.
He's got some weapons, too. Evans, we talked about him before this interview.
Mike can catch everything, can he?
He's a big boy, too.
Yeah, 6'5", played 1 year high school football, and then junior college, and 1 year at Texas A&M. And, you know, how about that draft class? Odell Beckman, Jarvis Land, the receivers in that class 4 years ago were something special.
No doubt. And he's got some others, too. DeSean Jackson comes over in the draft this year. O.J. Howard at tight end from Alabama. This is, you know, the Tampa's the sexy pick to win the NFC South. Are you buying the hype, Gene?
Well, to do that, you got to beat the team that won it all last year, and you got to beat the team that won it all 2 years ago. Okay, the NFC South is a rugged division. Carolina, remember, what they lose one game until they played in the Super Bowl and lost, but they won the NFC 2 years ago. Cam Newton had a tremendous season. I believe he may have been the MVP that year. And then, fast forward to last, the only team that beat them that year, they swept the Bucs. The only team to beat Carolina in that one-loss season was the Atlanta Falcons. And then last year, Atlanta, we're the only team that beat the Atlanta Falcons. So maybe there is a path there, but Matt Ryan is the reigning MVP. Cam Newton 2 years ago. NFC South is tough. If we can win the division, got great chances of winning the big 22-inch, 9.5-pound Sterling Silver trophy called the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year.
Preseason here. What's your – you've been around this league for a long time. Is the preseason too long?
Well, I don't know. The coaches – they probably know who their starters are going to be. They you lose players every year, you gain new players. Your first round pick generally is going to be a hit, going to make your starting unit. Your second round pick has a chance, and then you're going to do a few free agents. But you got to find the depth, and that's what these coaches are looking for. Yes, it's too long. Yes, the announcers with 90 players on the field. Last week, Tampa Bay played Cincinnati. The Buccaneers played 84 players. The Bengals played 80. That's 164 players. In the fourth quarter, it was who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's playing shortstop. And so it's tough. But for the coaches, they need more time to evaluate. And the way the rules are now, and rightfully so. It's tough to evaluate your team and the limited practices you have. So, yeah, I don't know if maybe I'm not reading it right, but if I'm a coach, I want more time to evaluate. If I'm a general manager, I want more time to evaluate. If I'm a player, one is enough. Let's go ahead and play the real games, you know?
Right, that'll be the thing the next time the CBA comes around. The players will want less games and more regular season games, maybe more pay, obviously.
Jay, I think that's the way it's going to probably go, but you know, right now it is what it is. I remember when the Bucks began in 76, I did not do their games. They played six preseason games in 1976. The year after Tampa Bay won Super Bowl 37, that would have been the 2003 season, we played in Tokyo, and we played five. We played the Jets in Tokyo. We played five preseason games. That is one too many.
It seems a long way to go for that extra one as well. Yeah. Hey, I'll bet you an ice cold Coca-Cola on the Alabama-Florida State outcome. How about
that? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm glad you're talking about Coca-Cola products in this Pepsi Stadium.
That's not going to go over well at all, is it, Gene? Funny how that works.
Florida State, you know, you can't go 15-0 unless you win that first game. And I just, you know, I'm drinking that Garnet and Gold Kool-Aid. I think I've seen in the practices that I've seen, this is a team that could go 15-0. No team's done it before. Florida State back in 1999, first school in the history of college football to go wire to wire, unbeaten, and now ranked number one at the beginning of the season and every week during the season. So that's a first. Don't know if anybody will do that. Alabama's had a shot the last couple of years, but they've stubbed their toe. They had a great chance last year until the last second of the last game down in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, and Deshaun Watson did his thing, and Hunter Renfro made that tremendous catch and broke a lot of Tuscaloosa hearts. But, 15-0, let's go ahead and take a shot at it. It's going to be a heck of a ball game. I'm glad that I don't have to go around scrounging for tickets because they're impossible to get.
No doubt, I've tried.
Yeah. Oh, have you? Yes. Yeah, the secondary market is going crazy. I don't know what it is. Number one, it's the very first college football game, very first football game, period, in the brand spanking new Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It is a battle of one versus three, probably, unless Florida State in the AP poll is two and Ohio State's three. But it'll be the highest ranked matchup on opening day ever in the history of college football. So it's got a lot of hype. Then you got the Jimbo Fisher and the Nick Saban. They grew up about 15 miles from each other in West Virginia. Figure that one. Cradle of coaches. You know, John McKay's from West Virginia. Rich Rodriguez, I believe, is West Virginia. Jimbo and it's Nick Saban, but there's a lot of hype about this football game. Both teams are loaded talent-wise. Both teams are 1-2-3 in the recruiting classes year in and year out. Both teams finished well, with the exception of the loss to Clemson. It's going to be a great game. And by the way, this weekend, Saturday, 2 weeks from this coming Saturday, is Florida State, Alabama.
Coming up.
Yeah.
And Thursday night, Jaguars, Bucks. You got some good football ahead of you this year.
Jaguars, Bucks.
In Tampa Bay and in Tallahassee.
I think Jags, that defense, my goodness. Calais Campbell, I remember when he played at the University of Miami, he was always a big guy, and I watch him out there, you know, around the sidelines. He looks like he's about 7'2" out there.
He's a large man.
Yeah, he is. And then you've acquired some really good defensive players, and I love Jalen Ramsey and Telvin Smith. Obviously, I got to give a little love to my Seminoles and Rashad Green. I didn't have a chance to see Rashad. I did see Jalen. He's going to be okay. He's healthy. He was going. He probably won't play this week or next week. In fact, he may not play in the preseason, but he's the real deal.
Gene, it's always great to visit with you, and we always appreciate your time here in Jacksonville.
All right, always good to be here.
Plenty coming up this week, Tuesday night on Fox 30 TV in Jacksonville. Check out Jags Wired, the weekly sound-filled recap of the week for the Jaguars. Really good stuff coming out of that, and a lot of it exclusive for television. Also on Jaguars.com Wednesday, the third episode of In the Trenches, presented by Gatorade. It's an inside look at training camp with the Jags, and we'll have Inside the Jaguars Live coming up Wednesday as well. And then Thursday is game night. The Jags host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in preseason week two. An 8 o'clock kickoff Thursday, nationally televised on ESPN with a Monday Night Football crew on the call. Jaguars radio coverage begins at 5 o'clock with a Public's Tailgate show on 1010XL Radio. And then Jaguars radio network coverage at 7 with Countdown to Kickoff. An all radio pregame is simulcast on video on Jaguars.com, the Jags app, and Jaguars social channels. Our thanks to Hayes Carline of 1010XL for joining us, and the voice of the Buccaneers, Gene Dekeroff. And thanks to you for listening to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast.